Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic.
What's happening? What's doing? What's shaking?
Hey, the Quebec Winter Carnival is ongoing right now.
Want to go?
No.
I will press the stop button right now.
Let's go.
Get my boots on.
I wish I had the time to go. I've gone a couple times in the past. It's a lot of fun. There's so much stuff that they do. We both saw videos today of the ice
practicing
races on the river. And we saw in that video, I believe we both saw it was the women's race. And so it's I'd like the what was your opinion of the paddling when they actually sat and paddled?
They didn't get far.
It looked very awkward.
Right?
They have these like 10-foot long paddles.
Well, yeah, they look like
weird
big sculling paddles, rows, or
and they weren't getting anywhere. Then the woman in the bow just kind of half hopped out with one leg and started kicking ice, and then they started moving.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point
of it. And you
can
see the current flowing underneath too.
And there was
so
wind.
All the ice flows, and you can see the water flowing underneath them, going underneath the ice flows. So it's like they have dry suits on. But they weren't wearing scuba gear. So if you fall in and get sucked under the ice.
Like we saw in that one article, the guy says, rule number one, don't fall out of the boat. Rule number two, make sure you don't fall out of the boat. Rule number three, don't ever fall out of the boat. Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing to do if you're into that sort of thing, right? Like, you'd like to try it at least once.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And not be the one at the front or the back. But they all jumped in there. You know what it was like? Have you seen the luge guys?
They all get
the bobsled guys?
Yeah, they all get
They all get pushing, and then one by one they all jump in?
Yeah.
It's exactly what it looked
exactly,
like.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? Everybody was just jumping in at the last second there, and then they quickly throw the oars out and start paddling a bit, and then they got stuck on that one giant piece of ice.
They were stuck on an ice floe. But then the woman in the bow just started pushing against the ice floe, and they started moving again.
Yeah, it's all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
All part of it. They were neck and neck.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
I'll have to do it sometime.
Absolutely.
Speaking of ice flows and paddling and whatnot over ice, I heard from my daughter.
Oh.
They went to Abashiri to check out the Drift Ice Festival in Hokkaido.
Okay.
The eastern coast of Hokkaido. That's only a few hour drive from where she is.
So yeah.
They make a day of it, right? Apparently, the drift ice was not participating and refused to show up.
Oh, no Russian drift ice.
No Russian drift ice. I don't know if the wind blew it another direction or it's just not made its way. I mean, they picked the weekend and hope for the best, right?
Yeah.
So there was no drift ice walking. There was no drift ice kayak pulling contest, all that sort of stuff. However, not to let the attendees down, they did have a kayak pulling race. They had a couple of two-person sit-on-top kayaks. They tied ropes to the front. They got teams of four people. Two people sat in the kayak while two people pulled.
Huh.
They marked a red line at this end of the field and a red line at that end of the field. And when the starter pistol went off, two people started pulling. They got to the end. They turned around, came ripping back. When they got back to the start line, they switched.
Yeah.
So the two that were pulling are now in the kayak.
In the kayak, yeah.
The two that were in the kayak now have to pull, and they do that
again
to the end and back again. First one's back, and they time it and that sort of stuff.
Was Ariana there to see it?
She was there to see it.
Right.
There was, like I say, a lot of people were having a great time, lots of laughs and watching them go and struggling and trying to pull and that sort of thing. And yeah, good time had by all. She was a bit disappointed she didn't get to see the kayaks out on the
next year.
In the bay. And
next year.
Yeah, next year they'll go. But on the way, there, they stopped into a little nature reserve place they saw along the highway. Because they'd seen tons of swans.
Oh.
There's a little bay from the Sea of Okhotsk that this bay comes in, and there's a little small little town there, and looks like they've built this new nature building, their little museum thingy in there and all that. So they went in, and they're quite happy. I guess it's just been open since the fall. So they're quite happy to get foreign visitors.
Yeah.
Which is, wait a minute, what? Well, oh, yes, four white people walk into this place in Japan. You're the foreigners.
Yeah.
And they, when they were there, so they saw a whole bunch of stuff about the area, about the bay they were, that was there, about the swans and other stuff. While they were there, they saw some stellar sea eagles up in the trees, like not ones you see at the zoo. Big, big eagles. They're really cool looking. And they're finding out that this place sees over 100,000 birds during migrations in the spring. So they're definitely going to go back up in the spring and check it all out and see what they can see. Because they've got, like, a type of red-crested crane or something like that are there. Goes through all these other little birds and a lot of waterfowl. And, of course, there's, like, dozens of swans there right now. So they go scooting through, too. So,
yeah. Did you look at the photos of the stellar seagull?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen them.
It's got the head of a penguin and the body of an eagle. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, the
peagle?
Yes, a peagle.
It's a peagle.
It's a nice looking bird.
It is, and big birds too.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we see them? What zoo did we see them at? Wasn't the, I don't think it was at the Toronto. Maybe we did see them at Toronto Zoo.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see them there live and in person, in real time. Out in the wild, as it were. Hmm.
It's got an unusual beak. It's very tall or thick beak.
The better to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Fish.
Yeah. Well,
and stuff.
It must be somewhat related to the penguin because it's got a penguin beak.
Except it can fly.
Except
it's
it
like
fly.
A penguin, except different.
A flying penguin.
It's just, yeah.
Just like a penguin, but different.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, she was a tad upset that she didn't see the drift ice stuff and and whatnot, or was able to go on the drift ice for a guided walk. But next year.
Yeah.
Next year. So all good.
Cool.
All good. And it is warmer here today.
It's
slightly warmer. It's been cold on the weekend.
Did you see the satellite images of the Great Lakes?
Frozen over?
Starting to, mostly. Erie has a gigantic 80-kilometer crack down the middle of it. But yeah, so... Well, obviously, Lake Ontario is not frozen over, but there is in some of the bays, it's freezing. Toronto Harbor is frozen, stuff like that. The ferries have to keep going just to break ice. But yeah, it's been a long time since we've had consistently cold weather that we could freeze up the Great Lakes.
Right, and John sent me a message going, hey, maybe check out paddling this weekend. And I said, well, you heard about like the 60-kilometer-an-hour gusts that are supposed to happen. And then the temperature plummeted. And it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going out. Yeah, yeah, nope. Didn't do any paddling this week.
Yeah.
It's nice to have all the gear to go, but even that.
Yeah, it's
at,
like,
at some point, it's just like, you know.
There's some limits that should be adhered to.
Yeah. When your eyes are just like little slits because that wind's blowing at 60 kilometers an hour in your face and it's bitterly cold.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you're not having fun. What's that?
That'd be type 2? Or maybe type 1 fun.
Type Z?
Yeah.
Type 67?
I caught some videos of guys who are out paddling in it, and he looked at the cameraman, and he poked the dry suit, his arm of his dry suit, and you can see the ice cracking on his arm. And he had, like, icicles coming off his eyebrows and icicles coming off his beard. It's like, oh, man, that looks...
Yep. I take the dog for a walk the other morning and came back and there was ice all in my beard.
Yeah.
And she's like, and then, like, it dried and then your beard's all soaking wet. And you're like, really? Yeah. Like, I need this before going to work.
Yeah. And you know, it's breath liquid.
Yeah.
So it's like you lick your beard.
My mustache is a booger connector. Well, let's talk about somewhere warm. Somewhere warm and somewhere that's doing some good things. Let's talk about Mexico.
Mexico, Veracruz.
Mexico. Mexico's National Commission of Natural Protected Areas.
Conan P.
Commission of Natural Protected Area. That must be like a
and natural NA. They purposely got Conan out of it.
Yeah, Conan P. reached agreements with tourism service providers to regulate kayak and stand-up paddleboard activities in the Veracruz Reef System National Park, aiming to protect biodiversity while allowing controlled recreational use. Agreements were finalized during a working session led by the park's management office, which brought together federal, state, and municipal authorities alongside tourism operators. Participants included the Port Authority of Veracruz, representatives from Boca del Rio's Commerce, Civil Protection and Integrated Coastal Management Offices, the Federal Attorney for Environmental Protection, and park and regional officials. It's a lot of people getting in on this. Under the agreements, tourism operators committed to complying with the distance and operational rules established in the park's management program, the main regulatory instrument governing conservation and sustainable use of the protected area. Operators also agreed to begin formal regularization processes with relevant federal agencies, including obtaining permits required to conduct tourism activities within the protected area and authorizations related to the federal maritime terrestrial zone.
So they're just in the planning phase now. They're just getting all the regulatory stuff in, permits, all that
getting
stuff.
Everybody on board, saying yeah. This is what we're going to do. There's no more willy-nilly going out there with your boats, going out there paddling.
It's organized.
Right? Because it's a protected area.
Well, it's a protected area, but they also have to, it's looks very bad to lose tourists.
Right?
So you need to regulate them.
Yeah! Who's going to know?
We only lost half a dozen this year.
Right?
We don't even worry about it until we lose eight.
Yeah. As part of the governance framework, the sector appointed a representative to act as a liaison between authorities and service providers responsible for communicating agreements and following up on actions stemming from the working sessions. Management program specifies permitted zones and conditions for non-motorized water activities. In the public use subzone designated for beach activities, stand-up paddleboard tours are allowed within 200-meter strip parallel to the shoreline. In the public use subzone for coastal recreational activities, kayak tours are authorized within an 800-meter wide area extending from the beach subzone, allowing operations up to 1,000 meters from the coastline. So they're letting the kayakers go a lot farther out than the stand-up paddleboarders.
Yeah, this is a kilometer out.
Yeah, that's holy not cow. Bad. Yeah. It's the ocean. What can happen? What's the worst that could happen? He said the dialogue advanced commitments focused on compliance with the park's management framework and reinforced coordination between authorities and the private sector. Agency acknowledged the collaboration of federal, state, and municipal institutions as well as business and community stakeholders. So this is the thing. They're all getting everybody on board here saying, hey, here's what we're looking at doing. Are you guys on board? And all these, everything from government to private people are all going, yeah, let's all get on board.
Get all the pieces in place.
According to Conan P., the ongoing objective is to improve the organization of tourism activities in the protected area, safeguard coral reefs and marine life, and ensure visitor safety under responsible use guidelines. The coral reefs, because coral reefs can't just be replaced quickly.
No, they don't. And we have a lot of them dying around the planet now just due to, you know, ocean water temperature increases.
And well, plus you get the boats running through and hitting
people
stuff.
Dropping anchors and
people wanting to take a piece of coral home from vacation.
They do that too, yeah.
Right? All that sort of stuff. And yeah, I guess visitor safety too.
Yeah.
These actions form part of Conan P's broader goal to protect 30% of Mexico's ecosystems by 2030.
Only 30%.
It's better than 0%.
I think Canada is not doing very well at their protections as well.
Yeah. You know what? All countries around the world are starting to do, not all, but
we're doing better.
They're doing a lot better than they were. You got to set your goals by, you know, 2030,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then once you get there, you set more goals.
Yeah.
The so-called 30 by 30 roadmap includes 76 strategic short, medium, and long-term actions organized into 5 quantitative and qualitative elements: management effectiveness, equitable governance, surface area and zones of importance for biodiversity, including representativeness and connectivity, contributions of indigenous peoples, and sustainable use. The plan involves multiple government sectors and social groups to strengthen the link between productive activities, conservation, and economic development. The money's a big thing as well, right? Let's build condos here, and then you can go see the live right off the reef. It's like, yeah, you don't need that. Veracruz Reef System National Park is the largest coral ecosystem in the Gulf of Mexico, featuring 27 reefs across 6 islands, rich with colorful fish, sea urchins, and seagrasses. Declared a protected area in 1992 and a Rasmar site in 2004, it is vital for biodiversity despite facing threats from port expansion, pollution, and climate change. So, key details of the Veracruz Reef Park here. Located off the coast of the city of Veracruz, serves as a significant marine habitat for species like sea turtles and diverse corals. So, you know how you Mexico comes down around to the top of South America where it joins Central America joins?
Yep.
How it's like curved inwards there, yes. And it sort of loops up like a letter C?
Yep.
Veracruz is sort of at the bottom left of west side of the letter C. Protection status. The site of National Park is a wetland of international importance. In 2013, the protected area was reduced to accommodate a port expansion, but in 2022, the Supreme Court of Justice of the nation ruled that the expansion authorization violated environmental rights, demanding a new comprehensive assessment. The area is a hub for tourism, including sport diving, fishing, and boating, while also being a focus of conservation efforts to protect its biodiversity. The reef acts as a crucial yet vulnerable ecological barrier for the region's marine life.
I was looking at some of the numbers. So Canada doesn't even make the top 10 for countries in the world that protect their ecosystems. But they also didn't make the bottom 10 either. But I don't know where they are in the mix. But this, if Mexico manages this percentage, they will be in the top 10.
Yeah, but they're small.
They're small. But, well, not that small. They're huge.
Compared to us, they're small. Yeah. I think, how many Mexicos would fit in one Ontario?
One?
Oh, I don't think so. You got to fold it in half and get a couple in there.
And there's also the issue with the map. It's not physically accurate.
I know. No, but you know what? Mexico worked on inclusion and climate change initiatives in 2025. They imposed a $4.8 million U.S. dollar fine on a mining company for environmental damages. And now they're taking action to protect the Veracruz reef systems. Positive steps, hopefully tourism companies keep in line with the paddling boundaries and they can keep heading towards that goal with a reaching it positively.
So Canada has the same goal as Mexico. They're working towards 30% protection by 2030. 30 by 30.
Yep. And I don't know that they'll reach it.
So they're currently at about... Before I even looked it up, I was going to say I thought we were at about 17%. We're not quite there. We're at 15.54% for marine coastal areas that are conserved.
Well, this says that they're trying to reach their broader goal to protect 30%.
Yes.
It doesn't say how far along that 30% they are.
They are right now.
Yeah.
Canada's at 15.5%.
It's better than 0%.
It is true.
Right?
Absolutely true. So, Marshall Islands apparently is one of the worst. if not the worst.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
They don't care.
That's a shame.
Well,
they can barely, you know, once it's gone.
If you have trouble feeding your own people, then
yeah,
environmental protection is bottom of the list.
Not the top of the list. Well, shall we just keep along on this environmental theme, shall we?
Absolutely.
Let's just keep it going. Do you know where the Hudson River is?
I do.
It's down in the States. So we're
coming
a little bit farther from north
so
towards
us. So it's in Jersey? It's
New York.
Yeah, New York. Yep. New York.
Some summer adventures are planned years in advance. Speaking of, you have till... I think you only got a week and a half left if you want to try to get a book a spot in the Grand Canyon lottery.
Oh, yes.
Applications
February
are...
February 16th they close or something? Is that what it is?
16th, 17th?
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to get your... get in the lottery for a chance to go down the Grand Canyon.
It's a lottery. It's not first come, first serve.
It's a lottery.
It's a lottery.
Yeah. So Google it. Check it out. Anyway, talking about planned years in advance, these adventures, others come together in a matter of weeks. Been there, done that. For University of New Hampshire PhD student John Henkelman, it was the latter. Less than 2 months of preparation, he set out to canoe the entire Hudson River, 315 miles from the Adirondacks to New York City. Henkelman, who is pursuing a doctorate in natural resources and environmental studies, saw the trip as an opportunity to make the most of rare free time between jobs while keeping a promise to himself and his wife. I previously worked in the pharmaceutical industry and got burned out, Henkelman says. When we moved up here to pursue this second career path, my wife made me promise to do something crazy and adventurous like this. Kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking up. I was trying to think, what do I remember about the Hudson? It was the Miracle on Hudson. There's Moscow on the Hudson.
Is being cleaned up slowly, and dolphins have returned.
It is, yeah.
Right?
They've
remember we talked
it up
about
a
that?
Lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's been years since they've seen dolphins zipping through there. In the weeks leading up to his launch, Henkelman studied maps, refreshed whitewater canoeing skills he'd learned. Gathered the equipment he'd need to paddle through both wilderness rapids and busy city channels. And in July, he launched from Henderson Lake in the Adirondacks, the headwaters of the Hudson. Over the next month, he collected data about the river's water quality, spoke with people about their connections to the river, raised funds for American Rivers, a nonprofit that supports clean waterways. And there's pictures of him at a picnic table. So he's got his tent set up or whatever, and he's doing stuff. And he's at a picnic table, and he's got all his like beakers and water testing stuff there, testing the water from the areas and stuff, and writing his findings and all that sort of stuff. So basically just like a...
It's a working,
portable lab.
It's a working vacation.
Right? Yeah. Trip tested both his body and mind with long days under the sun and stretches of wilderness that left him completely alone. Oh, the dream. The first week was the hardest because it was so isolated. The Hudson River Gorge is wilderness. Nobody else is out there, and it gets lonely fast. To keep himself from giving up on the hardest days, Henkelman made a rule. He wouldn't consider quitting until he had 2 nights in a real bed and a couple of hot showers. By then, he knew the exhaustion and doubts would fade, and they always did. It's a good way to do it. Feel like giving up? Just take a quick breather and keep on. Henkelman says the best part of the journey was the people he met along the way, from riverside residents who invited him in for meals to fellow paddlers who shared the water. One town, a couple welcomed him into their home to wait out a storm, ended up introducing him to local history and community life. In another, strangers insisted he sit down and share lunch before helping him stash his canoe safely on their property.
Cool.
Everybody we've talked to that have ever done massively long trips have always said it's the people you meet along the way that lend a hand, say, hey, come on, let's get you something to eat and all that sort of stuff.
The worst people are in cars. The best people are on the side of the river.
Right? You don't know these people, but they pretty much bring you into their lives, and it's just amazing how nice they are. I stayed at people's houses across the political spectrum, and everybody agrees that we need clean, healthy rivers. We might differ on how we want to have clean, healthy rivers, but we all have the same fundamental agreement that what we've done in the past isn't necessarily the best, and we can do better. Henkelman's data collection included what he called the basic river vital signs, such as dissolved oxygen, nitrates, phosphates, and carbon dioxide. He found that the Hudson River is healthy for animal and plant species to survive, with oxygen levels remaining high throughout the trip.
Well, that's good.
Even in New York City.
Really?
While these vital signs are a good start, the river does have larger issues that still plague its overall health. Henkelman stressed that his goal wasn't to publish the data, but to educate the public about water quality while learning from the people he met during the trip. My research looks at an individual's sense of belonging and attachment to a natural resource. That's where the water quality fits into the bigger picture. As I went down the river, I noticed that people feel connected to their section of the Hudson, but rarely think about the river as a whole. Which makes sense.
It does, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, with us here, I mean, if you take Lake Ontario, we think about the part, Durham region, right?
Yep.
I'm thinking more Ajax, Pickering, Whitby
Absolutely.
Area.
It's where you're used
more
to seeing the water. It's where
you're
used to interacting. Yeah.
I'm
very familiar with the local area where I live, and you're more familiar with where you live.
I don't really think about what's happening on the other side,
So
you know, along Niagara way.
His discovery is, of course, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Seeing that the water was fairly healthy reminded me how regional people's views are and how little academic research filters into everyday life. Most people only think of state or federal policies, not the studies behind them. For me, this reinforced the importance of making research accessible to the communities who live and work on the river. Which is, especially with a big river like that, as opposed to, I mean, the Lake Ontario or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of the Great Lakes system sort of deal. You know, so you know what's going on in your 315-mile river.
Yes.
Your section of it, at least. As Henkelman starts a new academic year at University of
New Hampshire.
Yeah. He's considering a similar paddling project closer to home on rivers like the Merrimack, Salmon Falls, and Saco. He says his experience on the Hudson also reinforced his long-term goal of helping communities see rivers not just as resources, but as vital parts of their identity and future. Sounds kind of indigenous of him, doesn't it?
It does, right?
I mean, you listen to talks by indigenous peoples about the rivers and stuff like that, and this is exactly what they're saying.
Yeah.
Always have.
Talk about the identity, the future, the healthiness.
Yeah. It's not just for resources.
Hmm.
I think we take our rivers for granted. When you're out on the water, you realize how amazing these places are and how much they mean to a community, whether it's for recreation, drinking water, or simply having a beautiful place to enjoy. Henkelman says, too often, though, we've treated rivers like dumps. Recreation helps change that perspective, opening people's eyes not only to what's wrong, but also to the possibilities.
We've been seeing a move in the last several decades where people are, I can't remember the name of the river. But when the river caught fire a few times in the early 70s, that's when the EPA got involved with, hey, you know what? We need to regulate this because obviously we are out of control. And now we're getting to a place where, you know, people are paddling rivers in Chicago and here on the Hudson and whatnot, where there is a resurgence of the health of the rivers where people are once again able to swim. Like I remember when I went to St. Lawrence College in Cornwall, Ontario, there was a factory there, Domtar, and you had to be careful. There was a couple incidents where people were out. I wasn't with them at the time, but they were out water skiing, and they wiped out, and suddenly their skin was burning. They got onto the boat as fast as possible, and they had a full body rash from something that was in the water. And so there was some effluent coming out of Domtar, and it's like, hey, as most companies say it's a solution to pollution is dilution. But, you know, when it first comes out of the factory, it's not so diluted, right?
Well, Rice Lake, they used to be that fertilizer plant, from what I'm told.
And
right?
That's why it's so wheat-choked.
So many. Yeah, but the bass fishing, let me tell you.
It's great for fishing.
It's great for fishing. But trying to get your motor through that,
yes.
If you don't have one of those cages on your blade.
Exactly, or cutter.
Like, it's nasty.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But we are doing better. As a species, we're still going wrong in a lot of places, but, you know, we're starting to clean up our rivers where we recreate. And I think that's what it is. As more people get out and more people become familiar with outdoor recreation and camping and so on, people do suddenly go, oh, we should be protecting this. I can't believe we haven't thought about this.
Taking pride and ownership of their little area.
Absolutely.
We've been saying that for ages.
Yeah, and you see people do that, like the spring river cleanup and like the shoreline cleanups that we do every spring. Like people go to their local areas and they get together en masse and fill bags of garbage, right?
So. Yeah. It's the way to do it. And I mean, like I say, with more people getting out there nowadays and stuff like that, you don't want to be paddling. Oh, hey, I found this new hobby, paddling. I'm going to stand up paddleboarding or kayaking or something. And ew, what's
exactly.
that floating by?
Hey, how come there's a oil stain on the bottom of my canoe?
Yeah, so they're starting to say, hey, let's
clean this
up. Take this. Yeah. I mean, there's more people out there that are more politically involved in getting that sort of stuff done. And we need those people, but not everybody's going to be going down to City Hall and raising a ruckus.
Yeah.
And there are people that will do that, but we need the other people as well to sort of go along with that and say, hey, if you can get them to help, you know, start it, we'll pitch in as well.
You need leaders and you need joiners.
Yeah. So. And there's so much more of that going. Like, I don't know how many times we've talked about stuff like this, but I don't get tired of talking about it.
No, absolutely.
You know, the environmental part of it and all that is all over the world. It's not just, you know, not just in North America either.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the world it's starting now. And that's pretty good. So, yeah. So hopefully he finds out more and can keep his message getting out there like he wants to, and good on him. You brought this one.
Yes. It's a it's all about a very large mouse.
Very large mouse. and the use for paddle craft that aren't normal.
Yeah, exactly. This is a fringe use of a watercraft.
So, in Wyoming, a horse that went missing during a July fishing trip was rescued from deep mountain snow in late January using an unconventional method. A river raft pulled by snowmobiles. You sent me the video and I'm thinking, okay, so what's all about?
Why are you showing me this?
A horse named Mouse had been missing for months when a group of snowmobilers discovered him nearly 10 miles into the Wind River Mountains above Dubois. So yeah, he got spooked or something and ran off on one of their trips.
They
or
weren't
something.
Very clear on the loss of the horse. They got separated somehow from the horse. They spent spent most of their vacation and trip looking for the horse, and then after about 10 days, 2 weeks, they were unable to locate him.
Yeah. Co-owner Preston Jorgensen had nearly given up hope of finding Mouse, though he never lost faith that the horse could still be alive. Because you're thinking he's lost in the mountains.
He can still eat.
And there's lots of hungry things up there.
There's things that'll eat him, but he has no shortage of food until the snow flies.
Right. Somehow Mouse survived the elements. Finding him presented a new challenge. How to transport the horse through deep snow and rugged terrain back to safety.
They don't exactly have snowshoes for feet, so he'd be post-holing everywhere. The horse couldn't get far.
Yeah, that's what they say is it's when he's trying to walk and stuff like that, in the video, you see he's sort of in some sheltered trees.
Yeah.
So he can get down to but the snow is deep. So it's not like he's lost weight. He's, you know, hasn't been eaten because it's once the snow flew, right?
It's harsh.
That's when a great idea came up of, hey, we'll get a river raft, one volunteer, Buster Campbell, said with a smile. Campbell approached a local Cody business called River Runners with the unusual request. owner Hunter Burrell had one simple question.
Why?
If you don't have me mind me asking, what do you need this for? As one would.
Why do you need a raft in the middle of winter?
Hey, you got a pickup truck. Can I borrow your pickup truck? I need one. Why? You wouldn't believe me if I told you, Campbell said. Despite the unconventional nature of the request, Burrell agreed to help with the rescue effort, and the crazy idea became a miraculous rescue. The rescue team used the raft as a makeshift sled, with Mouse riding inside while snowmobiles and a snow cat pulled the vessel through snow for 10 miles. Jorgensen said Mouse wasted no time getting comfortable on his rescue boat. That would have been something to see.
Yeah, it would have been.
Just this horse laying down in this giant river raft.
They said when they first came up to him, the horse was like, yeah, people.
Yeah. He walked right up in there. We let him stand there for a little bit and let him know everything's okay. I was pretty excited to see all that, just him riding in a raft. Jorgensen said that Mouse is continuing to recover. He's doing great. He's eating and drinking water just fine. And I actually saw him trotting around in a field. Campbell said the rescue demonstrated how community members can come together to solve problems.
He was missing 6 months.
Right? Mm. 6 months. And that's what I say.
They're wildcats and stuff up
wildcats
there. Like wolves and wildcats. And
everything's up there. Yeah. They got wolverines.
I don't Bears? Think the horse was Mouse was at risk of a wolverine attack.
Why not? Could happen.
It's an ankle biter.
Bite his legs off. Then he falls over. It's all uphill for
but yeah, they would have wolverines,
bears,
fox, coyote, bear. They would have it all.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the fact that he
might
made
even
it.
Have Sasquatches,
Sam Squatch.
Yes,
that's what makes it so amazing. Campbell said, "People on different fronts of life, and everybody just able to sit down, come down together on a situation with one thing in mind: we're going to get him out of there."
That's awesome.
And they did. That was a pretty cool video, too. Yeah. Like, I guess you just Google horse, mouse, rescue,
was
Wyoming.
Wyoming horse rescue.
Yeah.
And so you'll see the videos pop up.
Yeah, the videos will pop up of him in the
he's just laying,
raft. Just laying there, enjoying
laying there
their
in the
ride.
Raft. You can see that he's tied down a bit, probably just for safety, so it doesn't pop out.
Yeah.
You imagine if he did get into deep snow, it's like, now how do we get him into the raft? Because they did use
the snow. They plowed it too, right?
They used the snow cat to tamp down the snow to make it solid enough for the horse to walk on top of the snow and then loaded him into the raft.
Now the question is, was the raft blown up before or after he was in it?
I think I saw a video where it was partially deflated.
It would have to be because he's not going to step
over
the size of a big whitewater
raft. They just
need
to get him onto it and then inflate around him.
Yeah. Have him lay down. And the fact that he got him to lay down.
Yeah.
Sit. Lay down. Roll over.
Well, they said when they first put the raft out in front of him, he just walked onto it. He's like, okay.
Right?
Then, yeah, whatever. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'm hungry, man. Give me some food.
It's like he's done it 1,000 times.
Yes.
Maybe he had. Maybe that's where he's been for 6 months.
He's been rafting.
Been whitewater rafting with people. Now there's going to be lost or whitewater rafting horse posters all over town.
This horse keeps stealing rafts and running down the river.
Oh, that's pretty cool. And the fact that they 10 miles away.
Yeah.
And they got him back down and back to where he needs to be.
Mouse is very lucky that somebody came across him.
Right? Denver, Colorado, speaking of being out that side of the country there. Known for attracting outdoorsy types with its easy access to the Rocky Mountains. Love the Rocky Mountains. But you don't actually have to leave the city to have fun outdoors. One of the best parks in the Denver area is Confluence Park in downtown. Urban park where Cherry Creek joins the South Platte River is home to the 16th Street Wave, where you can kayak, surf, or even ride a stand-up paddleboard through a stretch of white water. Also a fun spot for walking, biking, and relaxing and sunbathing near the water. Right in downtown.
Yeah.
Town, you can do some whitewater stuff while you're on your lunch break. If you don't travel with your own kayak or board, I'm going to work. I just got my kayak with me. You'll still want to try out the wave. The nearby Confluence River and Ski offers rentals of all kinds of river gear. Even if you don't want to get in the water, Confluence Park is an ideal place to take a moment to escape from the bustle of the city. As one Yelp reviewer put it, I found a big flat rock near the water and just sat, listening to the rush of the river drown out the traffic. Kayakers bobbed past like they were on some secret adventure. It's the kind of place that makes a Tuesday feel like a soft reset.
Nice.
Get himself a little lunch there and have a snooze and not return to work. As you take in the sights, you're at the site of Denver's very first founding. In 1858, long before it became a river surfing destination, gold was discovered in the waters here, helping to kick off the Colorado Gold Rush, which created Denver and indelibly shaped the state. The area around the river became industrialized as the city grew, but after the Great Flood of 1965, I didn't know there was a Great Flood of 1965.
The way they talk about it, though,
right?
They say, oh, the Great Flood.
The Great Flood. You'd
be thinking 1800s or the 1920s, but no, this is 65. This is recently the Great Flood of
65. I don't remember it because I wasn't born yet. It was reimagined and redeveloped to create the beloved park that's here today. So if you're in Denver, Colorado, and you want to have a little afternoon getaway.
Afternoon getaway in Denver, Colorado.
Just go to Confluence Park. Hit Confluence Kayak and Ski, and you can get yourself some paddle gear to use. You can rent some and get on the water, do a little bit of whitewater kayaking and stand-up paddle boarding and that sort of thing. Be cool.
Mm-hmm.
The things you find out about metropolitan areas. I came across this one here. From the Adventure Journal.
Ah, yes.
Stephen Casimiro, founder and editor of Adventure Journal. Like the majority of us, doesn't have the time to spend half his life on expeditions and massively long trips like we talk about, like we read about, like we watch YouTube videos on and thinking, do these people not work for a living?
Professionally unemployed.
Right? He wrote an article about himself and 2026 that slightly resembled my idea for what my 2024 was supposed to be like.
We had so many plans.
But due to a multitude of reasons, was not. So I read this article, I'm thinking, this is sort of basically what I was looking at doing in 2024.
Yeah.
And then everything exploded in my whole entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And all my plans went out the window, and then the 2025 plans got changed to 3 weeks in Japan.
Yeah.
So I've got a file folder here with a whole bunch of stuff for my 2026, which is sort of a revisiting
of the 2024.
My 2024 was supposed to be, minus the trips to the U.S., apparently.
Yes.
So he wrote this article. Last fall, when I first started thinking about making 2026 the year of doing hard things, I concocted a list of all the hard things I would attempt. Now, my list was not hard things. It was just a lot of things. Originally, there would be a major hard thing every month, but practically got the better of me, and I scaled it back. Truncated, it included hike the Pacific Crest Trail desert section, 700 miles. Run, hike Joshua Tree's 36.6-mile California riding and hiking trail in a day.
Oof.
Well, you're not going to catch me running 36.6 unless I'm chasing an ice cream truck.
Clearly, this is Steve Casimiro's goal and not Sean's.
Not my goal. And like I say, unless I'm chasing a donut or an ice cream truck.
Yes.
Remove a ton of trash from the Mojave Desert.
A physical ton. He was actually going to... That's a lot of
I don't know if that's an actual ton or a metaphor. Not a metaphor. What's the word? Just a turn of phrase.
I guess you could just find one abandoned vehicle and you...
There you go. Backpack the Trans Catalina Island Trail. report a feature for AJ using Adventure Journal, using only handwritten journal entries and sketches. Summit 50 peaks on the Sierra Club's 100 peak section. Make 4 new friends and go hiking with them. Camp at least 30 nights. Achieve language level A2 in Portuguese.
I've made ambitious lists like this for myself before, and I look back at it now and it's like,
what was I thinking? Day 5. This is how I die. As I considered each of the items on my list, I got really excited. But then I made a list of all things I'm already committed to do in 2026.
So there's my wish list.
And
but
reality
wait, there's an actual
hit.
List.
Yeah. And reality hit. Plan, edit, and publish 4 issues of Adventure Journal.
Because he's the editor, right? It's his journal.
Write and send 50 Adventure Journal newsletters.
Oof, that's a lot.
Write and send at least 12 editions of the Long Weekend Coffee newsletter.
Say what?
Yeah, there's a Long Weekend Coffee newsletter.
Oh, I got to sign up for that one.
Go through California Naturalist, that's Naturalist, not Naturist, certification curriculum. 6 hours a week plus field work plus a volunteer project. Oh. And have a life. Well, you know what? That list could be your life. Although I count many professional athletes as friends, I am not one myself, and I don't have the portfolio, time, or resources to turn my life over to full-time adventure seeking. My adventures and my hard things have to fit within the context of my relationships and prior commitments.
I gotta work.
The same as yours. Yeah, my wife has this thing about mortgage payments,
yeah, paying the bills,
clothes, groceries, food on the table, yeah, having a vehicle to drive, gas to put into it. Yeah, you know, things like that.
You have what, 2 or 3 vet appointments every month or something?
Oh, lately. Don't remind me. The beauty of this brainstorming is that it honed my priorities. I'd love to tackle everything on that list, but what do I really want? Is it hard physical effort? More exploration into the unknown? Personal growth? Yes, yes, and yes, all the above. But mostly, I want more time outside connecting with and learning more about nature. So after a lot of thought, I've determined my hard thing for 2026 will be sleeping outside at least 100 nights.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
3 months.
Hmm.
Doesn't say how much of that's going to be in his backyard.
That's true.
And considering that he's way down south where it's warm.
Which is easy enough to do. He's got all year round to
do it.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, yeah, okay, we got from June till September. No, he's got all those other months that are in there. My wife points out that this is more fun than hard, and I agree. Some of you probably do this every year, but my thinking is that 100 nights will be a stretch. It will require commitment and focus all year long. It can and will include seeing new places and climbing peaks and picking up trash. And it doesn't preclude me from embracing my initial list. Indeed, in the last month, I've gone on hikes with 2 new friends.
There you go.
And if you were to go to the pound and take 4 dogs on a hike.
There's 4 new friends.
Volunteer to take 4 dogs on a hike. Boom. 4 new friends right there. Gets that one right out of the gate there. Hardest thing, I believe, is not whether you push on when you feel like quitting. It's overcoming inertia and starting in the first
place.
That's
the tough thing.
That's the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you planned, okay, we're going on a canoe trip. I got the canoe on the truck. My stuff's all ready to go. I just got to load in the truck. We'll get up in the morning, get washed, dressed, get some food, pack the last couple things, get in the go. Okay, I'm going to get up at 3 in the morning. Then your alarm goes off at 3.
It's like, oh, what a stupid idea.
Whose idea was this?
But it's not just that. It's like getting the idea and bringing it to fruition. It's like sometimes it's like, oh, this is really tough to plan. This is, you know, there's so many things that change. Like, for example, you suddenly had some vet appointments, this, that, the other thing, and like sick animals, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, well, that maybe I'll put this off for a week and I'll do something else. And so it's like one of those things, the best laid plans, right? It's,
yep.
It's just getting that inertia to get moving in the first place.
Yeah. And hopefully nothing gets in your way. But yeah, like I say, getting there, making that plan and saying, okay, we're going.
Yep.
This is what we're doing. Meet you guys all there. And it's easy. If you plan on meeting people places, there's a bunch of these getting together.
You're committed. Yep.
It's not like, you know what? Yeah, I'll meet you there at the put-in at 8 in the morning. You can't just not show up.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's going to get around really, oh, yeah, we were supposed to go, and he just didn't show up.
And that getting on the go inertia, that includes like any hard trip where, like, I've been on quite a few hiking trips and so on, or just canoe trips where you wake up in the morning, it's like, okay, yeah, we got to get going today. We have a lot of miles to get underneath the canoe, and you roll over in your sleep bag. It's like, oh, my muscles are so sore.
Yeah.
So it takes you a bit extra. It's like, I got to go. Got to get up. I'm so tired, but I got to get up.
I don't hear anybody else out there. Oh, is that rain I hear? Maybe today will be a rest day. Maybe I'll just sit in my sleeping bag until later the rain stopping.
See, with any of the trips where I've been on with Mike Burns, he's an early riser. So you'll just kind of wake up and it's like, oh, what was that? So you can hear Mike out there cracking branches and splitting wood and getting a fire
filling
going.
Filling a pot with water.
Making coffee. And it's like, yeah. It's not even light yet. Why is he up so early?
Did you even go to bed out there, Mikey?
But you do appreciate it when you hop out of your tent and you go over to the fire pit, the fire's blazing and there's a coffee already ready to go. And it's like, whoa, this is awesome.
It's easier to get up in the morning if you're just getting up.
Yes.
And going somewhere.
Yeah.
And then coming back.
Yeah.
Than it is having to get up in the morning, pack all your stuff up.
Yeah.
Throw it all in the canoe, head to another spot.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I'm just going to leave this gear here and maybe I'll luck into having gear at another place.
And it's also on those days when you got to get on the move and pack up. It's like, if I sit down and have breakfast, I'm not getting anywhere.
So right?
I need to skip breakfast and eat on the water.
I think that's sort of where my whole coffee and oatmeal came in.
Just get
it's
it
like,
done.
You know what? Just have a quick oatmeal, have a quick coffee. The coffee I can drink while I'm packing
you
up my tent and stuff
like
that.
You could even mix the coffee and the oatmeal together.
Oh, I've done that with hot chocolate. Don't get me started on my gourmet choices. Anyway, he says, my hope in writing about hard things talking about my progress as the year unfolds is that it will encourage you to consider your truest goals, dreams, desires, and to commit yourself to what's most important. As far as I know, we only get one go around, at least in these bodies, and there's no time like now to make the most of it, so let's go do our hard things. Stephen Casimiro. So, like I say, this sort of reflected on me, my 2024 thing that I'd made this, I'm going to do this. Nothing like running 40 miles or walking 700 miles.
No.
Yeah. Forget you, pal. you know, so you make your big list, leave it for a couple of days, then come back to it, compare it to your absolute priorities, you know, like he says, work, family, friends, etc. Trim it down. Keep it simple. Keep it doable. And make sure you just make a point of starting. As he says, that's the hardest part. If your goal is to spend more time outside, take people with you. Like I say, if you got plans to go hiking with people, you can't really just, you know, oh, it's too early. I'm not going.
Yeah,
they'll go without me. No, they'll be sitting there wondering what happened to you. Did he die on the way here?
Is he in a ditch? Yeah. Did he get stuck, a flat tire?
Add to your list as you go, and you accomplish things that may have been on your initial list but got trimmed off. Add them back to that list. Like you say, if you took off meeting four new people and go hiking, and then you just happen to meet up with four people and go hiking, throw that back on your list. You get it. Or if you unexpectedly accomplish things, like I say, that you've that were on your list. And yeah, look at your list at the end of 2026 and start your new list for 2027. That's my plan. 2026, I'm going to make a list. May not do any of it, but 2027, I'll make another one.
Well, on my list, Quetico has been on my list since 2018. And it's like, okay, 2019. Okay, I guess 2020. Oh, COVID. It's like, okay, 2023. And so we keep pushing off Quetico. And there's all these best laid plans. You always, it's like, this is what we want to do. Okay. So right now we're currently planning 2027, the Nahani. That's the plan. The kids are 13 and 16. They're going to get something out of it. They're more useful because they're stronger. So yeah. So there's going to be some, there's going to be some canoe lessons and so on. So we're it's one of those things. It's like, okay, well, if we can plan it for 2027, we can send the kids to Pathfinder or something, get some paddle strokes under them, and so right now I think we're going to miss the boat on Pathfinder for this year.
Take them down to the lake.
Yeah, yeah, but I would like them. I want them to spend some time away from home doing canoeing stuff. Friends of Siobhan's, they have their kid is 16 or 17 now, almost the same age as Stella, just slightly older. And he's going into his fifth year at Pathfinder.
Really?
And so he's going as a guide instructor? He's, whatever it is. I don't know what they call it, but he's going there. He's going to be working there this summer.
Cool.
His fifth year. It's like, that's amazing. Like last year, he spent a month there. And when Siobhan told me about that, it's like, a month? Do you know how much it costs to spend a week there? So yeah, so they save up and they send the kid there, and it's like, that's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Oh yeah,
they've been doing it for decades.
Yes, yes, but that's a lot of money commitment.
That's why I say I just take mine on canoe trips.
Like
we're big on the day trips. Always were big on the day trips.
I would like them to experience it outside of the family. I'd like them to do something where they're more independent from family.
So go to a river.
Toss them in.
Drop them off at the top of the river. Give them the map and everything they need, a little doggy bag with lunch, and say, here's a bridge down this river.
There you go.
It's about 5 kilometers down. We'll see you there.
I'll be down there reading a book.
If you're not there by 5 o'clock,
you're going to have to hitchhike home.
Yeah, I'll be having to come up with a reason to tell your mom you didn't show up. So we don't have kids anymore.
Yeah.
Well, if you want, for a low, low price.
Uh-oh.
I will take them out and teach them some bad habits.
Teach them bad habits, yeah. Who taught you how to paddle a canoe?
Sean did. And I'm going, okay, so you should have seen what I taught these kids. You paddle with the side of the blade slicing through.
You should never insert more than 1/3 of the paddle blade into the water at any one time.
Straight out to the side as far as possible. Face each other. That's the best way in the canoe.
Every paddle stroke, you have to hit the gunwale with the paddle shaft.
Right?
Loudly.
Right? If there's not marks on the side of your paddle, you're not doing it right.
You need a dented paddle on the shaft.
Right? And remember to paddle by feel when there's rocks in the water.
Yes. Never look ahead. Never assume the depth. Just always assume the water is deep.
Yes. Never met a stone I didn't like.
And the further you can run that canoe up onto shore when you're getting out, it's easier to pull it out when you're done. Just run it right into the rocks.
Yeah, just take a good paddle at it, just guns going.
Leave your canoe sideways at the portage entrance while you run your pack across the portage.
Oh, yeah.
If people need to get around it, they can walk around it. Bad habits.
Yeah, don't forget to block the paddling, the put in at the far end.
Oh, yeah, you got to block the
Because, you know, people should know you're first.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. 101 ways to teach people to paddle.
Yeah. See, I don't know why your child got murdered on the, on right? the portage.
Like I say, buddy, for a low, low price, I too can teach your children yeah. the fine art of canoe paddling. So, that's all I've got this week. Well, almost all I've got. Next Tuesday, February 17th, we'll be recording. We're sitting in this little chair.
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
What would be significant about that?
10 years ago, February 17th, 2016.
Was that when we first recorded, or is that when we
that
first
was the
published?
Launch of our very
that
first
was our
podcast.
First published date.
First episode was February 17th.
Which initially was online radio.
Yep. Yep.
So it's been 10 years. Can't believe we haven't murdered each other yet.
Or maybe we have, but we just got better.
We just got better.
I got better.
We got better at the recovery phase.
Right? Yeah. 10 hmm. years.
Congrats, buddy.
Yeah, back at you,
I
pal.
I can't believe you survived me 10 years.
Right?
Right? I can't believe I haven't killed you yet.
It's going to be a knife fight afterwards. It's our 10th anniversary knife fight in the back parking lot.
Yes.
Come one, come all. We'll be selling tickets. Bring it's, a beer. Yeah. Or two. Or three.
What's the 10th anniversary gift? A knife.
What's a little stabby stabby amongst friends?
Edged weapons are 10-year right? anniversary gifts.
Welcome to medieval night. Here's my axe.
Yeah.
No, no. Maces are not allowed.
No.
Yeah, 10 years next
that's,
week.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's been a fun time.
Yeah, and that's our last episode?
Yeah, it'll be our last episode. Let's just call it our last episode.
One left, yeah. guys. One left.
One left, and then that's it. Until the next week.
Yeah, until the next week.
Outdoor shows.
Yes, outdoor shows.
Only a few I got left. Three of them left here. Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show, February 20th and 22nd. So this weekend coming up is Family Day weekend here in Ontario.
Yes.
And so next weekend, the International Center, Mississauga. Everything for outdoor fun and travel. Lots of speakers on different stages. A water demo pool, seeing paddling demos and all that sort of stuff there. And I'm just waiting for the day Kevin Callan's out there giving a demo and oops. Over he goes. You'll see me at the side of the pool going with my fingers crossed, my eyes closed.
Holding his head under.
Tip, 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 tip. Capsize. Come on, Kevin. You can do it. Capsize. I would say as concerned as I would be of him going over, going, part of me would be going,
There's lots of people there to say.
Oh, there would be a lot of people in the same boat. They'd be concerned for Kevin, but we'd be giggling. And do you think he would ever... Do you remember last year when Kevin was up there and was giving his demonstration and oops, over he went.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. Do you remember 2 years ago when Kevin was up there?
Poor Kevin.
Oh, you know. OutdoorAdventureShow.ca for more details. And don't forget, there's also different dates for Vancouver, Calgary, and Montreal.
And as I discovered just before recording, I bought my tickets for it. It was going to be $16.80 plus taxes, fees, and whatever, which is, would be end up around $20. But if you get all 3 days, if you could make it, I don't know if I'm going to make all 3 days, but I bought a 3 day pass to the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show, and it only cost me $23.70. Yeah.
$23 if you go one day, you go three. Most of them are $25 for one day anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Thing,
so
all 3 days?
All
so,
3 days, yeah.
So it depends on what speaker's there. Maybe I'll try and make it down two days.
Wait a minute. I feel a cold coming on. Yeah. I might not exactly. be able to make it to work yeah. next Friday. Is that a little cold? I feel like I'm
does beclept. Anybody at your work listen to the podcast?
I don't know, but if they do,
don't expect me.
I'll pass my cold on to you. I got a cold from Sean. Quiet Adventure Symposium, one of our favorite shows, but not this year.
I wish I could make it.
Yeah. You know, part of me is still saying, you know what? Make a run for the border. Anyway, Saturday, February 28th, 31st Annual Symposium, held at Michigan State University Farm Bureau Pavilion in Lansing, Michigan, 9 a.m. till 5:30 p.m., quietadventures.org. Don't forget to check out the rabbit show next to us.
It's always a highlight.
It's always a highlight. Everybody loves the rabbits. Yeah, it's cool to see all the little fluffy critters.
True. If anybody makes it down there, it truly is amazing. Yep. Like, yes, go do the symposium, but find some time to walk next door. It's just a, like, what do they call? I grew up Q4
4-H
club.
Yeah.
So this is a 4-H club for rabbits. Yeah. And so
and we say next door, but basically there's this wall that goes down the middle of this pavilion where the Quiet Adventures is on one side of the wall. The rabbit store is on the show
other.
Is on the other
it's
side.
In the same building.
Yeah.
And so there's the concrete floor area where everybody sets up, and they're in the sort of the corral stadium area. And so it's very cool. All the different rabbits, like there's rabbits there that I've never seen before. Like the gigantic, Gigantus, I don't know what they are, but
Biggest Rabicus.
Biggest Rabicus. These things are the size of a dog.
Right? If you're going to the Quiet Adventure Symposium,
mm-hmm.
Captain Peter Frank is going to be there.
Yes.
We had him on the podcast there, and he did the great loop in his canoe. He's going to be there, so go check him out. Ottawa Outdoor and Adventure Travel Show, April 25th to... Oh, there's a typo. April 25th to the 56th.
The 56th of April.
The 56th of April. Time goes slow. April 25th and 26th. Wow. My calendar's a tad different than anybody else's. Nepean, Ontario at the Nepean Sportsplex. Free admission and parking. Doesn't get much better than that. Outdoor gear and equipment and paddle craft, adventureottawa.ca for more info.
Perfect.
Nah. And that is all I have.
And that is that.
For that. That may be it. That might be it forever and ever and ever and ever.
I'm looking forward to seeing the gutter guy and the...
The pots and pans guy and the comforter guy. Yeah,
there's always knife guys.
The massager people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all jokes aside, it is nice going to these outdoor adventure shows, whether it's in Lansing, Michigan, Toronto, or Hamilton, or whatever. It's a good time. You get to see a lot of interesting and new gear, and there's
a bunch of people.
There's always a good deal to be had on canoe packs or paddles or watercraft if you're looking for a watercraft. It's
good. I am picking up my new pack system from Recreational Barrel Works. Andy's going to be there. I told him I'm coming for it.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be bringing it with him.
Perfect.
And if he doesn't, there will be beatings. He has a lot of barrels, and I will stuff him into one.
Even if he does one, bring one especially for you. He'll have them in stock there.
He better. That's all I'm saying. Is he better? Because if I walk out of there with a little pack.
Just make sure you get the liner.
Two of them.
Yes. Two liners.
Because it's the...
It's a double stack.
The double Wanigan sort of looking ones.
They look very much like they're a soft-sided Wanigan. Yep.
And then you put the liners inside, and we're getting the heavy-duty tump as well.
Yep.
Because, got to give Tracy a lesson on how to use a tump. She doesn't like it.
I don't either. I find, I don't know if what is the ideal weight you'd want to put on a tump? Like, are you saying you're pulling against it like it's like 10-pound weight on your neck? Or you don't want to put a lot of weight. That just crushes your neck. So you're just trying to lift and leverage the weight.
It's just supposed to take some of the weight off.
Help it float up off your shoulders and your hips.
Yeah.
So I've never
It's not like you're toting a car.
No, I know, but I've never gotten used to it. I've tried using a tump, and I've always found it uncomfortable.
Really?
Hurts my neck. Obviously, I've got too much weight on the tump.
Your big fat head.
Yes, my big fat head.
Your big fat head.
And it also, it's hard to make it just hover on your above your forehead or on your forehead. It's like it keeps slipping and sliding.
Well, you can't wear a hat, though, doing it.
No.
Or you turn your hat backwards.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, this one's got the wider band, I think.
Okay.
Which will make it
be nice if the band was
padded,
kind of cupped, too. Because, like, the tumps that I have for my packs, I've pulled them off. Like, my canoe packs, I've removed the tumps just because it's a thin band. It end up with this woven pattern across your forehead. And so if I'm wearing a baseball cap, it's, like, uncomfortable because it's where frontward or backward, just something's digging into your head. I don't know. I'm doing something wrong because everybody swears by them, but they're not working for me.
All the cool kids have that tump strap mark across her forehead and the farmer tan arms.
Your forehead's caving in. Yeah, tump line.
Right? Do you ever wear your baseball cap backwards while outdoors fishing all day and then you take your hat off?
You have
and
a you round, got round
half moon burn. Or remember back in the early 80s?
The Moonies?
The like football jerseys that had a lightweight but had all the holes,
the perforations,
and then you sit there and you'd be sitting there laying there in the beach or something like that, or sitting there at the side of fishing, and you get home, you take it, looks like you got all these little
I've got a rash,
holes all over yourself.
Do you have a rash? No, whereas my shirt is holy,
right? Oh, kids today just don't understand.
They don't get it.
So you know what though, when we go to the show, Andy will show you how to use a tump.
I'll have to get him to show me.
Right?
I'm clearly doing it wrong.
We'll buy a whole bunch of stuff, throw it in one of the bags.
Yeah.
Teach you how to use a tump, and then you can just toodly-doodly around the show with the tump on and
just give
it
away.
Just carry stuff.
Yeah, I need a canoe, too.
Right? Just carry stuff around. Yeah. So what you got to do, rent yourself out to different, like, get a canoe, packs, and all that stuff, and just walk around the show with all this stuff, and people look at you and just have booth whatever on everything, and then they know where
canoes,
to go.
Booth 556.
Yeah. See? Make yourself a couple of bucks in the process, pays for your
ticket.
Be like
a signboard guy, you know, the guy in the monkey suit that
Eat
flips the signboards.
Or Subways. Or there you go, dude. See?
Done deal.
Done deal. Let me make a couple of calls for you.
Yeah.
All right, that's all I got. You got anything else?
Well, we ran long tonight.
Nah, this is average anymore.
Yeah.
We're averaging about 1960 downloads a week.
Oh, yeah?
Almost 2,000 downloads a week.
That's good.
No, it's not just that week's episode. It's other, like, new people listening as well, but that's not too shabby.
It'd be nice to have more. Like 100,000 a week?
100,000
a million?
Week. No, because I'd pay for
not enough people know about
bandwidth
us.
Overage.
Yes, I know, right?
Right? Yeah. It ain't free.
Too much success gets expensive.
Oh, success is expensive, yes. Anyway, so next weekend, come and check us out at the... Not 2 weekends from now.
Yes.
Come check us out at the Toronto Adventure Show. We'll be wandering around... Probably aimlessly, but we will be wandering around. In the meantime, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.